I'm very pleased to welcome back to View from the Roundhouse Professor Martin Drum. How are you this morning, Martin?
I'm doing fine, doing well, and Friday morning, fit and proper as always.
Well, I'm pleased to hear you're fit. I'm sleep deprived, truth be told, Martin. Last Friday morning, the US was bombing nuclear power spots around Iran. We wondered what the situation would be a week later. Here we are a week later. An awful lot has happened. Trump seems to be claiming victory, but so too is the supreme leader in Iran and no doubt Bibi Netanyahu. Who are you giving victory to, if anyone?
I'm not giving victory to anyone, but I'll say there is a form of victory for Trump in a way. Let me explain. Firstly, I think the whole premise of this bombing Iran and was that Iran was about to launch a nuclear weapon, or about to access a nuclear weapon that was imminent. Well, I'm not buying that because the Trump administration's own national security advisor contradicted that herself, and in testimony to the Senate committee not that long ago. So that whole premise, I think, was a lie, but that's not the first time. Wars of aggression are usually based on lies. I'm not buying that from either Trump or Iran, Trump or the US. I'm also not necessarily buying that those nuclear facilities have been completely destroyed either. So the preliminary assessment from the Pentagon appeared to be that it wasn't. We saw a nice PowerPoint-laden presentation from the Defense Secretary to indicate that it was, that we can and should be skeptical of. And of course, I'm not buying Iran's suggestion that somehow they've delivered a slap in the face when the only thing that they did to the US was fire a few missiles and told them in advance they were firing the missiles just to make sure the US wouldn't get upset. I think there's a fair bit of bull dust here all round. And a lot of playing to one's constituencies. There is one practical gain here for Trump, though, and this goes to why he really did this. It wasn't about Iran's nuclear weapons. It was about him not wimping out when he made threats. That's what it was really about. Have you heard the term TACO, Michael?
I have, but you better tell our listeners about it.
It's this concept, Trump always chickens out. And there's this
Well,
perception that Trump offers all these bombastic statements and never actually follows through with them. I think this is to the nub of the matter. Trump had to demonstrate that he was prepared to use military force so that the next time he offers threats, they'll be taken seriously. That's what this was all about, in my opinion. And to some degree, he's had some success in that respect, I would say.
Martin, you're expecting everything in a strange way to just settle down to Bibi Netanyahu claiming victory, and we've cornered these guys, Iran trumpeting on that they'll still carry on with their nuclear ambitions, whatever they are, and Trump not sulking, but quietly heading back to DC and doing something domestic, and in 12 months' time, something will happen about Iran again.
I think Trump has no intention of getting himself involved in some quagmire like this. That's why he wanted to drop a few bombs. He wanted to draw a line under it and say, this is done and dusted. It certainly was in the interests of Iran, at least, to draw a ceasefire. Iran was not doing well in that war. They'd had all of their air defenses taken out. They were pretty much defenseless to Israel's bombing attacks. There was even talk of regime change. I think that's another whole story and quite messy. We won't go down that path, but I think they were very happy to draw a line under it as well.
Well, leaving Iran, sort of, Martin, it looks like Trump has done something of a victory lap when he headed off to meet his NATO buddies. Big Daddy turns up. Is that a victory for him, NATO?
I think this is somewhat of a victory for him. Every US president for decades have talked about making NATO allies pay a bigger share of their GDP on defence. He's got a commitment from every one of those, except Spain, that they'll do it. I suspect that they might be following through just because they can't be guaranteed that the US will jump in. And they know they need to be more autonomous in their defense capabilities. And I think it's been relatively successful there.
And just spinning off on that for a moment, Richard Marles, the deputy PM, turned up for the NATO meetings and had some on the side himself. Does this mean Australia has to bump up its defence spending to 5% as well, Martin?
I don't know if we'll go to five because we're much lower than I think we're about 2.3 or something in that vicinity. I think though that we will, and there's a couple of reasons why. One is yes, there's pressure from the US, but two, for the same reasons that the NATO allies are doing it, I think there's a bit of uncertainty about the US's role in the world, brought out by the Trump administration, and a bit of a sense that we may need to control our own destiny more. Albanese doesn't want to commit to it at the moment for good reason because he doesn't want his defence policy to be dictated by openly by Trump, even though that's having influence, as we know. So I think in over time he'll make those changes and make it look like it's his decision.
Martin, it looks like Richard Marles has agreed or has offered and offers been accepted to give, lend, whatever, an RAAF plane with funny looking things up on top of it that looks like it can work out who's coming from where, both to Poland and to Ukraine. Did you see that? What's that all about?
Yeah, it's more of this direct involvement in Ukraine. I think part of it is going to a NATO summit and having something on the table because, what are you doing there, and why are you completely irrelevant? So he wants to demonstrate Australia's relevance. I think there's a sense that Australia wants to convince European leaders that it has skin in the game as well. And is acting in solidarity to them. Remember that Australia is looking at options for some form of defence pact with the European Union, EU, so or collaboration. So I think this is part of that broader agenda.
Martin, never forget that a picture's worth a thousand words. There was a picture of the people who didn't seem to ever look like they'd get on, namely Donald Trump and President Zelensky, sitting alongside each other and shaking hands and almost looking lovingly into each other's eyes. What's going on? Is the US, is Donald going to be the victor when it comes to Russia and Ukraine after all?
Well, this is where Trump's, bombing Iran probably helps him in other respects as well. One group that would be pretty happy to see the US bombing Iran is Zelensky, because guess who supplies the drones to Russia to attack Ukraine? It's Iran. So popping them back in their place is music to Zelensky's ears. And I think Iran's going to be probably a bit wary about sending a lot of its mil any military capability over to Russia at the moment because it needs to rebuild its capability itself to defend itself. So I think there's probably some good news for Zelensky and all of that. And for Trump, I think he's probably battered Zelensky in the past. He knows that Zelensky will probably sing the right tune. And so for him, he's more comfortable now.
Well, we don't hear much on the Trump theme park front, Martin, the Gaza Strip. Do you think he cares? Did you think he's interested in becoming a victor of some sort in Gaza? Is it really just going to be left to just to, I don't know, keep going further and deeper into the ground?
Not really. My simple answer is not real. I don't think he cares greatly about Gaza. And if anyone disputes me, look at his own words. I don't think that's, sometimes he expresses no interest, sometimes he expresses some interest, and sometimes he, as you have indicated, wants to turn into the Riviera of Italy, which is just kind of completely naive. But I think that at some stage he would like to see peace. Because it suits him. He has some good relationships with Saudi Arabia and some of the other Gulf rulers. And that way, you can get business done, etc. So I think he's more thinking from that point of view. But I, Is he inclined to restrain Israel? I can't see any evidence of that at the moment.
Just going back to Australia and your earlier comment about Prime Minister Albanese, in fact, the whole of the Australian government and cabinet, are we really just in a appeasing Donald Trump mode? Is that what our position is in relation to Iran, Ukraine, Gaza?
Yeah, I think there's a misconception, particularly from the commentariat, Michael, around this. You're seeing a lot of articles talking about how, the scandal of us taking 24 hours to condone the attacks on Iran and this, that, and the other, and why hasn't Albanese got a meeting with Trump? And there is a reality in that in the pecking order, especially in Trump's world, Australia is always going to be a long way down. It doesn't really matter whether it's Albanese or someone else. He's not really prioritised the agendas of his key NATO allies. So to expect him to bend over backwards, change plans, etc., to try and accommodate Albanese, I think it's fantasy land, really. I think that he's been very open about America first. There's no hiding that. So we are a fair way back in the pecking order. We do have some importance to the US. We are, one of the Pine Gap bases of key base for their intelligence. It may well have been used, satellite imagery gun from there for the attack on Iran and other places. There's a massive base in Darwin where they're rotating their troops through, etc. In terms of the Asia Pacific, geographically, we're very handily located, but. So we've got certain leverage. Australia is, as everyone knows, has been a long-term military ally of the US, and also they are the single largest foreign investor, not trade, but foreign investor in Australia. So there is a bit on the line for Australia in this relationship as well.
Well, Martin, it's a beautiful time of the year here in Fremantle. The rain has stopped dropping on us deluge like over the last week nearly. It's coming back, of course. In fact, it'll be so wet again next week, it'll be a damn good idea to be in London and see if you can get yourself tickets to Wimbledon, which starts on the 30th of June. And I'm sure it's entirely coincidental, Martin, but I see WA's Premier Roger Cook and our Minister for Defence, Paul Papalia, have headed off to London and places nearby. I'm assuming that's why they've gone for the Wimbledon tennis.
Well, we better find out if they're going. I mean, if I was going over to London at the moment and it coincided with Wimbledon, you'd try to get a day's ticket, wouldn't you? Tuck into the strawberries and cream. It's not a bad shindig. I think there is a material reason why. There's AUKUS. The other part of AUKUS that we don't focus on as much is of course, the UK part of AUKUS, which is a bit more longer term. And there's a lot of discussion around UK's capacity to build the submarines that it's promised us. Perhaps even UK's capacity to build the submarines it would need for itself. So the plan by the Premier is to try and get some of that action for WA. So that's clearly what he's thinking of, and clearly there's some economic benefits to that. So I think that's probably the rationale underpinning his trip. Of course, you and I have discussed plenty of well-regarded reservations around AUKUS as a whole there. But if it is to proceed, it would be better if WA and particularly Australia generally is doing more of the building ourselves rather than having a foreign entity build it for us and we do the paying.
Martin, the talks have all been set up, obviously very professionally, intergovernmental, the whole thing. The trade envoy from the UK to Australia is going back to London to be there. And it's a really interesting focus because the state government says defence should become our second largest industry after mining, surpassing agriculture even. And so we're trying to get some of these UK submarines built in WA. I mean, that would be quite astonishing if you could pull that off.
I think it's logical. We've got I don't know if we've got the full capacity right now, but given that there's a fair run-in here, then I would expect that WA absolutely could play a key role in that. And we just talked about the incredible price tag of these things. Well, if you're going to pay that kind of money, surely you want to get some economic activity out of this. It makes a lot of sense.
Well, Martin, it's exhausting, isn't it? Having a job like yours, having to keep an eye on what's happening. Are you surprised, just coming back to the big story of the whole week, what happened in Iran, that it's in some ways fizzled out in the way that it has?
I'm pleased. It was really difficult to be sure. Iran's, it's got plenty of extremists in that regime, and you just don't know. So, I think self-preservation has probably prevailed here in terms of restraining them for the time being and retaliating in any meaningful way. But the last thing we would want is some sort of new so-called war on terror to break out, where Iran decided to strike at the US in a range of other ways, more surreptitiously, sort of suicide attacks on bases and the like. That would be really unhealthy. That would be to no one's benefit. So, there's people on various sides of this discussion, and then there's a vast majority of people that would just like to see peace in the Middle East.
It seems that the main reaction at the moment out of Washington is to berate the media, particularly the US media, but all the media for not being sufficiently praiseworthy of what a fine man and great leader the president is.
I saw that clash with the defense secretary in the US media, and this has been a fairly standard tactic in the Trump administration, not least the president himself, who gets stuck into anyone that's critical of the administration. Of course, he wouldn't be the first government to do that, but he's particularly scathing of this. And he has deliberately picked his key secretaries to be people like him. In the first administration, there was a curious mix of Trumpites, but conventional Republicans as well. That's less the case this time. They are complete MAGA people in most cases. Probably Marco Rubio might be the one exception, more conventional Republican, Secretary of State, but pretty much all the others, they're unconventional, shall we say, picks, Michael.
He plainly likes ex-Seth Rubio. I think we're going to see less and less of him because he's not sufficiently dramatic and Trump loving. There is an old expression, of course, Martin, which people in the media well understand, about shooting the messenger. We're going to see a bit more of it, I expect.
I think so. And the curious one, I think you singled out a Fox reporter of all places for criticism, with hardly a bastion of left-wing news, Michael, in the US. So if you're upsetting Fox, I think God help you in the when you're in a Republican administration. That was interesting to see.
Well, thank goodness for the highly independent, community-minded Free Metal Shipping News, Martin, and a view from the Roundhouse with Professor Martin Drunn. Thanks for joining me today.
An absolute pleasure, Michael.